Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door.
I'm not even gonna swat that fly. I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know and they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
Wait right there, Mr. Pinnell.
How do you know my name? I didn't tell you my name.
Hang up.
I didn't tell them my name.
They're all a part of it. They're all pods, all of them.
Do you ever wonder about all the different ways of dying? You know, violently. I wonder, like, what would be the most horrible way to die?
It's not my intention to do this in front of you. For that, I'm sorry. But you can take my word for it. Your mother had it coming.
Mommy, I want to see the bad man fly.
We better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
I just can't take no pleasure in killing them.
There's some things you gotta do. Don't mean you have to like it.
Seven days.
Wait a minute. I know who you are. Yeah, but I heard you were dead.
And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming. And the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the USA, and with me in the state of Michigan.
I am Eric.
Eric, how's it going, my friend?
It is going well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I'm here, frustrated with technology.
Yep.
Skynet is slowly taking over.
Yeah, Mike had some technical issues, so we're recording, but we're recording 20 minutes later than we usually because
Skype wanted to improve my experience, and I said, "Can I improve my experience later?" And they said, "Fuck you! We're improving it now. You have no say in the matter."
Unfortunate. And in the state of Massachusetts.
Hey everyone, this is Abe.
Abe, how's it going, man?
I'm doing well. Trying to stay cool.
Yep. It's been hot. Today's July 30th, 2015. Is the recording of this episode. And yes, it has been a hot week or so, even in on the other side of the country in Michigan, right, Eric?
Yes, absolutely. And somebody at work actually just made this observation today, which is that temperature maps are different now than they were in the 70s when we grew up. Because in the 70s...
They're computer-generated.
Well, that too. But in the 70s, they used to have like actual cool colors for cool temperatures. But now, it's just like the entire country is red. Like 70 degrees is red, and 90 degrees is a different shade of red. So it just looks like we're all dying.
Yeah.
That's global warming.
At least that's what some people tried to tell us anyway.
Yep.
All right. So, Eric, first off, you do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's called the Ascansity Podcast. It's a general interest podcast. You can find it on Stitcher and the iTunes Store.
ASKANCITY.com.
That's right.
Excellent. And Mike, you do a genre blog?
I do. That's www.unnaturalselections.com.
Excellent. And Abe, you do a genre blog?
Yep. It's called A Realer Movie Reviewer. You can find it by going to your favorite search engine. Or you can visit the Dark Discussions main page and look to the right-hand side. You'll also find links to the aforementioned blogs and sites belonging to Eric and Mike, as well as a few other goodies if you'd like to take a peek.
That's right, and that's www.darkdiscussions.com. And besides what Abe said about the other blogs and podcasts that you can link to on the right of the front page, at the bottom of every page of darkdiscussions.com are links to the Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast, Twitter, Dark Discussion 1, the RSS feed to Stitcher, and a few other things as well. And Eric, we wrapped up another podcast that me, you, and Mike do about 2 months ago.
Yeah, why are we still talking about it?
Well, to promote it, you know, for folks that may want
to. We're really going to promote it for like a year straight while it's off the air? Okay. it's a Game of Thrones podcast called You Know Nothing, Jon Snow. And we stopped at the end of season 5 and we'll begin again at the beginning of season 6 in April 2016.
That's right. That's right. So folks can go to darkdiscussions.com and there's a link to You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast on the front page. And you can find that on Stitcher as well as iTunes. Let's see what else. So, well, first let's get Mike's stuff over with, because Mike, you just got back from a convention, was it?
Yes, I did. I came back from Scares of Care Weekend 2. Down in Williamsburg, Virginia, which thankfully was a rousing success. Had about twice the attendance, I think, as they did last year. Raising money for Scares the Care, which I've talked about before, is a charitable organization that raises money for families in need. And I'm hoping I have interviews from that because my voice recorder started acting up. Only two, media celebrities that people might know that I was able to interview was Robert Mallet, who plays the Master on The Strain. Nice. And Larry Drake, I thought I got a really nice interview, gave me a lot of time, who you may remember from Dark Knight of the Scarecrow, Dark Man, Dr. Giggles. I kind of had to cut it short because I promised not to take up too much time with him. So I basically made it through Dark Man and had to stop there. But it was like at the end of the convention, and he just kept talking to me about other stuff for like another 30 minutes.
Cool.
But, yeah, so it was kind of neat. Nice guy. Convention went really well. There was they did a live podcast, a podcast called We Belong Dead, and their most, which is from Dispatches from the Weird or Dispatches Podcast, looking on iTunes. Their latest, so their most recent episode would be the live podcast from, The Scares of Care Weekend. It's only about an hour long, and you can probably hear my voice on it here and there because there were only about 10 or 12 of us in the audience. And, you know, they asked for feedback here and there. So naturally I shut my mouth off when I could, but it was a fun podcast. So if somebody is interested might want to listen to that. Saw a good movie there. Well, one of the independent films they screened was called Old 37. Which starred Kane Hodder and Bill Moseley. And if you'd like to see Kane Hodder doing the chicken dance, that's one you want to look up. it's got some rough edges because it's a low-budget film. Looks pretty good. Had some trouble with the sound because if you're used to typical convention experiences, you're using it in a lecture hall and or a conference room, projected onto the wall with crappy speakers. So wasn't the best format for the visuals or for the sound. I think there's some things about pacing and dialogue could have been tightened up, but for a low-budget film, it was pretty good. I would give it a recommend when it comes out. I think it's in October, if I remember correctly. But other than that, I'm going to save the rest for later.
All right. I just have a couple questions for you. You said you met up with Jamie Nash?
Yeah, but they took off before I was able to actually get the interview with them on Sunday.
Oh, okay. Did he mention about his foreword for the cryptozoology horror book called Out of the Corner of Your Eye?
No, he did not, because we didn't talk very long. I just kind of said, can we get an interview? They said, sure, come by when things are calm. And when I would go by when things were calm, either nobody was there or the people I wanted to talk to weren't there. I just had a lot of bad timing this weekend.
I see. What about David Bernstein? Did you see him?
I did see him. I mentioned your name. I didn't really get much of a chance to talk to him other than saying hello, and you said hello to him.
Very good. All right. So, yes, you can let us know further details whenever you want. And I assume you're going to make a blog up on naturalselections.com?
I'm hoping.
I understand.
I'm in the middle of going through the many, 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 many photographs I took. So.
Very good. And you'll post them on Facebook, I assume?
That's my plan.
Very good. Very good. All right. Sounds good. Let's see. Eric, yourself, genre-related news or movies or books that you wanted to mention that you've seen in the past week or so?
Let's see. We were just talking about this offline. I watched a movie last night, and I got a cool look up the name again. I cannot remember it because it's so
out
generic.
Of the dark or from
something like that. Dark Was the Night. That's it. I watched Dark Was the Night last night. And it's actually not a bad movie. It's got some really good character development and some pretty good acting in it. It's got disappointing CGI. Luckily, they don't use it very much, but it's prominent near the end of the movie, which is too bad because the end of the movie also leaves something to be desired. But 85% of the movie is really good.
Yep, stars Kevin Durand from The Strain. And it's based off of an old myth, or actually something that may have happened in England in 1850 that's unexplained, which is Snow Prince in the Snow. I wish they actually did that, Eric, in the movie, because I watched the movie as well this past week, where the prints that we see were actually in the snow and not just mud prints.
Uh-huh.
So I thought that was a minor flaw, too. But generally, I'm right there with you. It was pretty fun movie, but had some flaws, but still a good watch.
Right. I also gave another watch to Drag Me to Hell. That movie's just so much fun. I forgot how much fun it was because it's been a while since I've seen it.
The cut or uncut version?
I watched the uncut version.
So you watched her kill the kitty?
Oh yeah, that wasn't fun.
Oh, you're telling me the cut version? They don't have that scene in it?
No, they imply it, but they don't actually show it.
Okay, interesting.
They show her carrying something in a bag out to the garden to bury.
Gotcha.
But they show it in the uncut version. So I covered my cat's eyes during that scene. with my hand.
You have okay. They just sat there and took it?
Yeah, she did, actually. It's amazing. And then last weekend I watched The Babadook with my friend Dan.
All right. And what did Dan think of the two movies, Babadook and The Dark Was the Night, I think?
He did not watch Dark Was the Night with me, but okay. He liked The Babadook a lot.
He did? Okay.
Yeah. In fact, he was very disappointed when I told him there actually is no Babadook.
Yeah.
His response was, there should be a Babadook. The world would be a better place with a Babadook.
Very good. Anything else?
I think that's just, I don't know if you count this as genre, but I've also been watching the BBC series Sherlock and enjoying it immensely.
Ah, yeah. So we were talking about that offline. You said it starred how do you pronounce his name? What's his name?
Eggs Benedict Cumberbun.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And you said you're enjoying it then.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
And that's on Netflix, you said, too, right?
It is. Yep. Excellent. There's three seasons, three episodes per season, but each episode is an hour and a half long. So they do it differently over there.
Because they're weird.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Any further things?
That's it for me.
All right. What about you, Abe?
Nothing on my end, really. Just today's subjects.
Okay, very good. For me, I saw Creep again. I rewatched that with my wife. And, yeah, she felt the same as me after watching it. Very dirty. and also, she predicted it after 5 minutes into the film. She figured the whole film out. I couldn't believe it.
Really?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. She's good for her. Yeah.
Well, I got the basic gist after 5 minutes, but not the details.
Yeah. I don't know how she goes. She turns to me and she goes, you know, a major plot point, and I go, how did you know this? She goes, I just could figure it out right off the bat.
She listened to the podcast.
She did not. No. No.
She's Sherlock.
Yeah, she is. She is, yeah. So, yeah, watch that, and that's a great film, in my opinion. And then, Mike, what about you? Have you seen Creep yet?
No, I have not.
Okay, so we won't ask your opinion. And after you see it,
you can. It just won't do any good.
After you see it, you can give us a little 5-minute review next time or whenever. Let's see. What else did I watch? I watched a absolutely fantastic film called Unfriended. Absolutely fantastic. Easily one of the best horror films of the year, I think, so far.
I'm coming to not trust your opinion anymore.
Well, I'll say this: the critics thought it was good. That's all. And Jason Lloyd of Horrorphilia, Dark Horror.
Would you stop sucking his dick for 5 minutes? Seriously.
I thought the film kept me involved the entire hour and 23 minutes. And I rewatched it 2 more times since. It's just an absolutely great film. Oh yeah,
watched that movie 3 times.
Whoa. Oh yeah, yeah, that was absolutely. Oh yeah. Okay. yeah, it was a great film. Fantastic.
Have you noticed software inconsistencies yet?
Wait, what do you mean?
Never mind.
The software inconsistencies.
I talked about it when I first saw the movie.
Oh really? Okay. I'll have to.
But you never actually listened to me. You only listened to Jason, so.
Well, no, I remember that you said it was just okay, and I think you did as well, Mike. You just said you thought it was okay, but I'm not quite remember what you thought, Mike. And then I don't even
know. It was okay. It was fine for an evening at the theater. I'm just annoyed that Eric, you know, gets software inconsistencies, but I'm not allowed to point out dinosaur inconsistencies. Just saying.
Well, software's real.
Dinosaurs are extinct.
And to be fair, I only spent about 5 minutes on it.
That's a good point. Eric has a really good point. And he didn't have a cheerleader cheering him on while you did, Mike, with Christy.
Wow. We just got nasty on this episode.
I guess so.
I'm tearing
fuck
into
you all.
Phil.
Fight.
Mike's tearing into me. Phil's tearing into Mike. Oh, God, the bloodshed.
And I don't know if, Abe, did you see Unfriended?
No.
Oh, yeah. You got to watch it. I think you'll think it's great.
If you want, you could go watch Gallows again.
No. Fuck that movie. Fucking Riot's ass.
Well, the thing that was cool about Unfriended, I read an article about it in Fangoria magazine, was that it got such a great play on the festival circuit, including up in Toronto and whatever, that Blum, the company, decided to buy it because it wasn't owned by anybody. It was just a festival circuit film. And then Blum brought it to Universal. Blumhouse brought it to Universal, and they said, yeah, this is going to make money. And it is a good film, and they put it out. And made a lot of money.
To be fair, I might give it another watch because I did have my experience significantly reduced by other patrons at the movie theater. Somebody actually brought their fucking baby to that movie. So,
really?
Yes.
They had a fucking baby?
only Mike.
Bad man, Mike. Bad man.
Yeah, he really is. But... Yeah, you definitely should check it out on the small screen because how it's filmed anyway.
It might actually be more effective on a small screen now that you mention it.
Yeah. So
yeah, I'll give that another watch someday.
Yep, very good.
I didn't hate it, but I don't understand you watching it 3 times either.
Oh my God. I'll watch it again probably this week. It's coming up. Yeah, it was a good film. Now, Mike, what about yourself?
What about me?
Have you seen anything, or you've been too busy with the?
I was just. Much too busy, and it took me forever to catch up on my sleep.
Yeah. So you probably potted all night?
No, not really. It's just exhausting running around all day. And I don't know about you, but I know when I go to a convention, I'll forget to eat the entire day.
Oh, yeah.
I need to do that a few times.
Oh, the best was with me and Abe with the Rock and Shock convention in Worcester, Massachusetts last October. We walked out to try to find a restaurant, and the two restaurants next to the convention are like, you know, 4 hour waits, obviously. So we sat walking through downtown Worcester, and it takes us like a half hour just to find a place because all the places. Pain in the
goddamn ass. Everyone was full or closed.
Yeah, because most of the.
Only you had a car.
Well, we did, but we didn't want to have to pull it out and then repay to park because it was, you had to pay for parking because it was one of the, you know, it's a city. So it was only garages. You couldn't just park on the street because there is no street parking. So it was a pain in the ass. And then all the restaurants were closed because it was a weekend and these restaurants are there specifically for businesses, you know, during 8 to 5 hours. So it was a pain in the ass. But anyway, what about The Strain? Anybody want to mention The Strain? Any good stuff?
No, nobody does. Let's move on.
All right. Yeah, I'll just mention I watched episode 3, and yeah, it's real good. And enjoying the season tremendously. And then I watched the 6th episode of True Detective, and so far it's good. And there's only 2 episodes left, so it's kind of weird because it's definitely a different pacing than season 1 of True Detective.
Stylistically, it's very different.
Yeah, completely. So I don't know where or how they're going to end it and what the big thing is, because I don't even know what the mystery is. I mean, the first season, the big mystery was a serial killer is on the loose. This one, we don't even really know what the mystery is. It's just kind of bizarre, the whole thing. So, but it's still all right. What do you think of it, Mike?
It's okay. I know it's getting a lot of hate I think is undeserved. I don't think it works on the same level as the first season, but I think that has... I don't think it's because of the acting, which a lot of people have pegged it to. I think it's just... You just have so much spread out among more characters now. You don't get quite as much development. I don't think the story is quite as compelling.
Well, there is one reason that season 1 is definitely better than season 2. And I haven't even seen season 2, and I know Phil will agree with me here.
Oh, yeah.
Alexander Daddario.
Yeah, absolutely. I knew where you're going. You're damn right. Oh, my God. Absolutely. Yep, the whole birthday suit. Yep. So, all right. So, any news, Mike? Any news that you heard at the convention or any news on the internet anybody wanted to bring up about horror or genre stuff that's coming out? I know Green... Inferno has a date of September 25th is the release date for Eli Ross film. So now that's over. Took almost a year to get it finally at the box office, but it's going to make it, and it's going to get a wide release supposedly. So that's the news I got there. There's a death author, Tom Picker, really. Horror writer and noir writer, pretty big in the genre, and he passed away, unfortunately, I believe, cancer. So rest in peace there. So, but that's the only news I got. Anybody else?
Nope.
Apparently, I haven't watched it. The Scream TV series has actually gotten rather good reviews and has been picked up for a second season.
Hmm.
Nice. So I may have to catch that on Netflix or whatever channel it ends up on, service.
Is it actually being played now?
It's on MTV. I have no no idea exactly how far in it is. I think it's how close or how long the season is.
Right. Yeah. All right. That's interesting. I didn't even know it was even on the air yet. How about that? But yeah, that's interesting. So it's getting good reviews then and an audience.
Huh. All right. I'm just looking here. So somebody has a review of episode 5. So they're at least 5 episodes deep. I have no idea how much further it's going. Supposedly they're talking about making another Ghostbusters movie. That's not the same as the Ghostbusters movie they're making now.
Wait, what?
That's weird.
Are you talking about two simultaneous reboots?
They're doing, who is it with, talking about a script being written for a Ghostbusters with Channing Tatum and, what's his name from Jurassic World and Guardians of the Galaxy?
Oh, Pratt.
Chris Pratt. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're going for an expanded universe thing, how they're going to be connected, if they're going to be connected, but it apparently doesn't feature any of the characters.
What?
From that, so I don't know. I've given up trying to figure out what exactly.
It's Hollywood.
Hollywood is doing. Yeah.
They make me upset.
They're run by a bunch of stupid people.
Let's rehash something instead of making something original.
Not allowed.
And the trailer is out for the new Tremors film.
That's a good one. Yeah, it's supposed to be.
And I got to say, you know, the Tremors movies aren't always good, but they are always fun.
Never trust a trailer. We learned our lesson with Evil Dead.
Yeah,
I'm not trusting a trailer. Okay, I'm just saying that my experience with the Tremors films, even the Tremors TV series, even when they're not good, they're kind of fun. You know, it's and honestly, my problem with this trailer is that there is it appears to be an awful lot of scenes that are just callbacks to other horror films, and I'm hoping that's intentional homages. But when that's what seems to make up a large percentage of the trailer, it doesn't feel like they're doing anything original.
Right.
So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, that is interesting. We will see. But, yeah, I mean, there's still an audience out there for more Tremor films.
The one thing the world could always use is more Burt Gummer.
Assuming he's in it.
He is.
Oh, okay. We are still here. The episode on that movie that we did, it was just released, and... I'm surprised. The feedback on Facebook has been pretty good. People love that film, and we already got retweeted by the director as well. Yeah. So that was pretty cool. His name's Gagan. So that is kind of cool. What else? That's all I got there. I don't know. Any further things, Mike, that you wanted to mention?
No, that's all the news that I've heard of. I haven't caught a lot. So.
All right. Very well. All right. So I guess we can move on to our topic for tonight. And so, Eric, why don't let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight?
Tonight we're going to be talking about a film titled Horsehead.
Warning. You are trying to reach reality. Please hang up now. Jessica, Rose, your grandmother's just passed away. The funeral is next weekend. I would appreciate it if you came.
So, what's it like to be back in the old home?
It's nice. Still studying fantasies with that quack of a boyfriend of yours, darling.
Psychophysiology of dreams is not a con, Mother. It's a science.
When are you going to wake up to reality? It's not in your dreams you'll find the answers you're looking for.
Can you tell me about Rose's behavior days before she died?
She seemed obsessed with bizarre visions. Bad dreams, I think.
She has a bad case of the flu. She's going to have to stay in bed all weekend and take plenty of hot baths.
I really need something to inhibit her nightmares. I can't bear the fact that my daughter is being so affected by her sleep.
Horsehead, a 2015 film. It was played as festival circuits in 2014. It's a French film. The writer and director, and a director specifically was in a documentary from 2010 talking about French New Wave horror, and he was in there with Xavier Jeans and Alexander Aja.
And what region of France is he from, Phil?
Well, I know the film was filmed in the middle of France, in a town called let's see if I can find it here. I don't
know.
Yeah, something like that. It was called I lost the note that I wrote it down on.
That's a great name for a town.
Yeah.
But either way, it was by French guys, but it's an all English language film because they wanted to produce it for an international audience, and they thought it would be more marketable being an English language film. All the people in it, all the people in the film are from the UK, I believe, except for the lead actress. And her name is Lily Fleur Pontio, and she is actually from France. A magazine Fangoria issue 341. There was a big article about the film, and I pulled that out this afternoon and did some reading about it. One of the stars of the film is Catriona McCall, and she may be known for three Lucio Fulci films. She starred in those. She was in The Beyond, The City of the Living Dead, and The House by the Cemetery. And so it was kind of interesting that she was in this film. And based off of how the film is, in my opinion, it is perfect that she's in the film because it reminds me a lot of the film Lords of Salem by Rob Zombie, who as well grabs older actors from genre and brings them into his film. So the folks that were behind the film are Romain Bassett is the director and co-screenwriter with Karim Chirigwen. And those are the folks behind the film. Let me give a quick blurb of the story based off of the blurb from Fangoria magazine, which is pretty close to what we have on IMDb. But this is what it says. It says, Jessica, a girl haunted by recurring nightmares since childhood that have led her to study the psychophysiology of dreams and undertake therapy to understand their meaning. When her grandmother dies, Jessica reluctantly returns to her family home and her mother, Caitlin, with whom she doesn't get along with. From the first night, she experiences more nightmares and decides to attempt lucid dreaming in order to take control of them. Her subsequent visions reveal secrets about her past that her mother has kept from her, leading her to a horrifying world inhabited by twisted versions of her family members and a confrontation with the monstrous Horsehead, a creature clad in priest robes. So that's pretty much the synopsis of the film. So let's go around the table. We'll start with you, Abe. What did you think of this film?
It was weird. It was really weird. It's definitely a movie you have to see more than once, and I kind of wish I managed to get a second watch in, because there's a lot of things you need to try to pick up on. I liked the atmosphere at times, for the most part. Other times, though, the way it was a shot, it reminded me of someone's amateur music video. The effects were also varying, too. There were some really nice ones when it came down to the more grotesque scenes. But then at times, they were kind of really cheesy, too. It's going to be, not everyone's going to get really snagged by this film. Either because it's too slow, they can't understand what's going on. And that can be very frustrating for people. For me, it was just kind of in the middle. There's a lot of things I liked, but there's some things I was too crazy about and kind of was hoping to see where everyone else was at in regards to the film.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, I'm pretty much right there with you, Abe. It's definitely a very avant-garde film. So
avant-garde?
Yeah, however I pronounce it, the Boston way. But it's art house horror. It's definitely not a mainstream film by any means. You could even argue that it was. Even though some of the dreams are actually kind of give items to our main character things that she wouldn't have known otherwise. Besides that one fact, the film was very much based in the real world in a sense, because there's no ghost, there's no supernatural things. Everything that's supernatural is just her mind or what's in the dream.
I disagree, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, all right, that's fair. It's reminded me, like I said, Lord of Salem, very much so, because it was, avant-garde type horror. I read reviews that it reminded folks of Italian horror films that were directed by Mario Bava, Argento, and Lucio Fulci. I would even go as far as say that it was very similar to Jess Franco and Jean Rollin horror films from France and Spain. Very, very weird film. Again, Abe summed it up perfectly. It's a film you should probably want to watch more than once. Unfortunately, I was only able to watch it once because I rented it. If I had known that it was going to be this, in-depth to try to decipher things, I probably would have just bought it for the extra $7 on video on demand and then rewatched it. But I did not able to. I only had 24 hours to watch the film before it expired. So there's going to be a lot of things that I missed and probably mistake for, interpret wrongly. Yeah. So, yeah, that's my opinion of the film at this time. What about you, Mike?
There's movies that are made for me and there's movies that not. And I think this goes in the not category. I'm not a fan of very dreamy, sort of, hazy sense of reality films.
So not a fan of Jacob's Ladder?
I'd like that one, but it's kind of hit and miss for me, and this one is more of a, just doesn't work for me.
I know you liked Lords of Salem, Mike, right?
Yeah, but I also said, though, with that surprised me, because that's normally the sort of film I wouldn't enjoy.
Okay, yeah.
So I think that a lot of the film is well made. I think that there's some of the tropes are a bit tired, and we'll talk about that when we get into a spoiler section. But if you like that sort of dreamy, psychedelic, what's real, what's not real, disorienting type of film, like I said, art house horror, this could be up your alley. This is not something I would. This isn't like The Gallows where I'll say I couldn't recommend it because it's a bad movie. I'm just going to say that it's not my cup of tea.
Right, right. And for a more mainstream version of this film besides Jacob's Ladder, maybe the Jennifer Lopez film, The Cell, maybe? Possibly?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. The Cell was a lot more straightforward than this movie.
Okay, well, I mean the dream sequences or the weirdness.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah. Yeah,
I know where you're going with that, but I think you got it right with the term avant-garde. This film is much more avant-garde than The Cell was. The Cell was a very mainstream movie.
Now, since you just spoke, Erica, why don't you give your opinion of this film?
I thought it was, like Mike, I thought it was really well made. It has some fascinating visual images in it. Hot naked chick doesn't hurt anything. I have my opinions on the story. I'll get into it in the spoiler section. I did watch it a second time, and I would recommend it for anybody who's seen the movie and had a little trouble with it the first time. Because the first time you're trying so hard to grasp on to the meaning of everything that you can't really take it in. Because you're desperately scrabbling for some kind of handhold on the plot, or whatever the hell is going on. The second time, when you already know what's going on, it works a lot better because you're not confused. You're just watching. So anybody who watched this movie, I would recommend seeing a second time because you do get something out of it the second time. So I liked it, but I also can completely understand people like Mike who just say it's not for them, because I get it.
Yeah, no, and I would agree with Mike's statement as well, because actually everything Mike said, which is if you didn't like the film, it's not a film that you should tell people to avoid because it's a terrible film, but it would be a film that you would tell people to avoid because it's a film that isn't your cup of tea.
Right.
And I liked that comment, Mike. I heard about this film originally through Fangoria magazine, as I said. I subscribed to the magazine, and actually the issue that this was in, it was like maybe 4 or 5 months ago, coming up and so forth, and the issue was a pretty good issue because it had It Follows, it had Unfriended in it, it had A Horse Head in it, among a number of other things. And that's where I got to some of the stuff that I'll probably talk about today, was through what the director had to say, because they interviewed him. But then I forgot about the film until you brought it up, Eric. Because how did you hear about it? Did you see it appear on
I somewhere? Saw a couple mentions of it on Facebook, and then it showed up on iTunes. And just the cover art intrigued me.
Yeah, it's pretty good
cover art. And I was like, I watched a preview for it, and there was like, I think it was like about a month, I just kept passing it over going, well, I don't know. And then finally somebody said something good about it. I was like, just check this out. I think it might have been on the Horror Etc. page or something. And I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot. And I did. And I'm not going to say I loved the movie. I think it's visually fascinating. I liked the movie.
Yep. It's interesting because for folks who don't know how iTunes works, if you get the Apple TV, they have a list of films by genre, and you know the top rated film to the 44th film in order of I guess popularity, and It Follows has been like the number one for the past 4 weeks until it got deposed this week by something. And yet Horsehead, I don't think, ever was on the top 44, Eric. Did you ever notice it there? I had to search for it randomly.
I saw it pop up somewhere of its own volition. I didn't have to go looking for it the first time.
Okay, interesting. Now, Mike, where did you hear about this film?
The Dark Discussions podcast.
Oh, okay. So
that's
you
a good show. Everybody should listen to that.
So you didn't notice it on Facebook or those blogs like Chubb or whatever that you usually read, or Chud or whatever it's called?
To my knowledge, I mean, I don't remember hearing anything about it. Obviously, you know, I could have read something about it and completely forgotten about it. But I think it was when Eric mentioned it, or you had mentioned it, and then it was 2 episodes ago when we were panicking over what we were going to cover next week, because we were all just really depressed after spending 2 hours on the gallows.
We all wanted to hang ourselves.
Yeah, so, all right, well, yeah, I mean, generally, as we noticed, based off of last year, most of the best horror films were mostly straight VOD, and whether this is a great film or not is debatable. It is basically a straight-to-VOD film. What about you, Abe? Where did you hear about this film? I assume that you heard it through us, right?
Well, actually, before you guys even mentioned it, I had seen, I think it was a small article or a little page with the poster mentioning the film. In I think it was a copy of Rube Morgue or Fangoria. That's where I first saw it, and I didn't really think it would be brought up to this point, in fact. It just seemed like a little obscure little film until you guys started talking about it. I was like, oh, that film. Okay. So that's really the first. It's mostly a passing glance when I first became aware of its existence.
Okay.
Well, and I got to be honest, I was hoping that Christy was going to be on this episode with us. She needs to write us and explain this shit.
Yeah, she probably could figure this thing out in no time.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. So, what do we want to discuss about the film? Basically, our main character's grandmother dies, as I said in the little blurb that I read. She takes a train back to her family's home. The grandmother, those type of, I guess in this part of France where this English family happens to live, they still have the wakes in the people's house, so the bodies are brought back to the house. They're not brought to a funeral parlor. And so she returns with the grandmother's body and still in her bed to be viewed and eventually buried. She comes down with influenza, and it becomes bedridden for the majority of the film of the lead actress. But a lot of the film, as we discussed, takes place in her dream, so she's not bedridden to the point where the whole film she's in a bed because we are going through her dreams. So, what do we want to talk about? I mean, is it a movie about family dark secrets, I guess?
Yes,
pretty much.
All right. Now, I know when Mike is quiet, that means he didn't really enjoy the film much, because usually these type of podcasts where Mike doesn't say much, he doesn't know what to say, right, Mike?
Sorry. No, it's not that. It's right. There isn't. I don't know what to say about it because there isn't a lot to it. Are we going to get into spoilers?
Yeah,
all right, well, let's throw up the flag now.
Yeah, let's throw it out now, because you can't really talk about the film without the spoilers. I mean, the first
five...
whole
film is trying to determine what the fuck it means.
Right, I'll say one thing. Again, we're already in spoiler territory, and we just put the post up, but I guess this could have been said before that, which is the first 5 minutes of the film, our character has a dream where this horse's head puts its face through... not a tent, but, you know, one of those beds, I guess, with the canopy beds.
Yeah.
Canopy beds. And it looks like a kind of evilish looking horse head. And the horse.
White eyes. That's creepy.
Yeah. And the horse head kills someone in the dream. And when that happens, her grandmother dies back in her hometown. So that's pretty much the beginning of the film, and then she's asked to come home for the wake and all that. So, Mike, yeah, go ahead. You're gonna say something about spoilers,
well, or something. Right. So there are questions that I have. Is this woman supposed to be the daughter, Jessica?
Yes,
who's
Jessica?
Daughter? Oh, the young woman. Okay.
Jessica, yeah. All right. Is she supposed to be psychic? There's supposed to be this connection with the grandmother that she didn't get along with. She didn't get along with anyone in her family. Everyone in her family is detached and standoffish and impersonal. And she's resentful of that. But through her dreams, she starts unlocking the secrets of why the family is the way that it is.
And
it's not like she has clues to work with or evidence to work with. Right. It's just these weird revelations that kind of pop up through her dreams.
Well, I have a theory on that.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a key moment at the very, very beginning of the movie that is very easy to miss if you don't have to be looking carefully during that split second. It's when Jessica arrives and they send her upstairs with a flashlight to go to her room. She goes to turn on the light and the bulb blows. And in the moment that the bulb blows, it illuminates the room, and you see her grandmother standing behind her.
Which I thought was an effective scare, sort of.
Yeah, it was. So I believe that was indeed her grandmother's ghost. And through this whole movie, what's happening is that her grandmother's spirit is communicating with her through her dreams.
Oh, that actually... makes me a little more happy to hear that, Eric, because it was like Eric said, I mean, like Mike said, it was like, and I was just assuming that it was some sort of weird psychic thing that was popping up that was unexplained. Yeah, this kind of does explain it, that, oh, the ghost is communicating with her in her dreams.
Yeah, that's my theory, at least.
And there's also, at the beginning, they say something, because the horse head image as a thing that's pursuing her. They mention that horses represent death.
Right.
And mother, I believe.
And mother.
They represent the archetype of the mother, the symbol of the ferryman, and the messenger of death.
One package, it seems.
You mean not fairy as in winged little woman, but ferryman, like the sticks.
Yeah,
right?
From the underworld, skinning the dead in the little boat.
The dude with the pole in the water.
Yep.
Right, not Andy Dick.
Right, yeah, and that does make somewhat sense, because the horse, at least in this, even though you can tell it's a horse, it looks kind of skeletal, almost. And, the ferryman.
It's like a zombie horse.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, that's my theory, and I am actually more solid in that theory after watching it a second time. Because it seems to work.
Okay, that works for me. I was kind of on that wavelength anyway, but...
Yeah, go on, Mike.
So a lot of this is just, it's hard with stories like this because it is this dreamlike state. You don't have a driving plot line.
No, not really.
Following the character go through her dreams.
Yeah.
And
she goes in and out of her sleep, little bits and pieces. Each time she goes into her, she finds a piece of the puzzle.
Right. She starts taking ether to help put herself to sleep and doing exercises so that she can control her dreams. And to summon her grandmother's spirit so she could talk to her. And you do see, the grandmother in the beginning with her. Was her face torn up?
Yes.
Right. And then until she gets her to turn her grandmother into something that wouldn't freak out most children.
Yeah.
But grandma's looking for a key. You have to help me find the key. And, it's all, again, the psychic symbolism, and maybe somebody who's really into dream interpretation could explain more of this, or it would mean more to them. But this is not—it's not my thing. but suffice it to say that in the end, it comes down to, I don't know, to me, a fairly cliched and trite thing, because pretty much everything where there's a childhood trauma, it seems to always stem back to the same thing. Which is the evil father who, with some religious symbolism, it's just.
Yeah, well, you know what? The reason it's in movies so often is because that shit happens.
Oh, it happens, but there are, it's not like everybody was abused by the local pastor. I mean, there are other types of suffering you can have in your childhood.
But, right.
Yeah, let's talk about this grandfather. Basically, it is the patriarch of the family was the grandfather. The husband of the woman that just died, and based off of keys being unlocked in these dreams, we learn that he's this fundamental Christian kook.
At least that's we see him too. He's much young. He's pretty young in these flashbacks.
Well, and they also have I found this technique very effective, which is that all of his dialogue is overdubbed with this really creepy low voice. And they did a good job of matching lip sync, but the voice so does not fit this dude that's saying everything. He's just like, oh god, that's creepy.
It kind of looks like a demonic Edward Cullen.
Basically, I guess is the film all in all, the whole key of the film, if you just boil away all the dreams, is basically the family's fucked up because the grandfather was basically a religious kook that was forcing all his family to follow these weird religious crap.
In case if you missed it, the grandfather was also the father.
If that's the case, then the payoff of the story is much more scarier or important, I guess, than what I thought. Because all I thought the payoff was is that, okay, the family fucked up because you just had a father that was domineering. Or no, grandfather.
The father also impregnated his daughter. Okay. She got pregnant with twins. He actually killed one of the twins while it was still in utero by sticking a needle into her stomach.
Yep.
And he thought he had done his job and gotten rid of the unwanted spawn, but it was twins, and the other twin was Jessica.
Now, let me ask you this. Was that just a metaphor for an abortion, or did he actually stick...
I believe he actually stuck the needle in there.
Because we see the needles again with Mother when she's actually like a pincushion. She has several of them in her, and but she actually tries to do the same to her daughter.
Do we ever see any of the scars, though?
No.
I don't think we ever see the mother's stomach.
And I believe it's because Eric's correct about the needles, too, because, as I said, he tries to do it to his the mother in the dream tries to do it to the daughter, who I think he mentioned was also pregnant.
Yes. And we don't know by who, but it may be her school teacher because she's studying at university.
Yes.
Yeah, and I checked his age. He was, but if the movie takes place in present age, then the school teacher is around 67 or 69 because on the back of the book of the school teacher that, you know, he wrote a book, it gives his biography, and I froze the screen, and he was born in like the 40s. And that would make him around 67 or 69. I forget what exactly year it was. But so he's an old man, and she's like a 26-year-old girl. But
she'll do anything for an A.
All right. Okay.
So the reason that the relationship between Jessica and her mother is so horrendous and strained is because of this horrible history behind it. And they even say something at the dinner table at one point about how the mother's lied to her about who her biological father is. And there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
It's because her biological father is her biological grandfather.
Okay, let me betray my idiocy here. No offense, Phil, because I'm going to drag you in with me, because I also didn't pick up on the incest part of it.
Okay.
Okay, so what exactly was, where did that revelation come, or what was that he was the father, the grandfather was the father?
It was all the scenes in the dream it was confusing because in the dream, her mother still looks like her mother in present day.
Right.
And her grandfather looks young.
Yes.
But in reality, so it was her mother talking to her father.
Yep.
So the mother's father.
Yep. So she looks older than the father because
yes.
in a dream. Okay.
Yes. Uh-huh.
All right,
that's
I'm
one of the reasons it's so confusing.
But why does that mean that the father
was
her father?
Yeah.
Because the conversations they have. Because she's telling him that I'm the Immaculate One.
Right.
And then when she finally gives birth.
Well, if he's boinking her, then he's going to know she's not the Immaculate One.
Yeah, but he's fucking wacko.
Yeah, that's true.
Wait,
I know he's fucking wacko.
There was also a bit of dialogue he mentioned during the birth where he accuses her of infidelity.
Right.
So
interesting.
And he basically says that he never wanted this child and banishes them from the household.
Okay, so you're based off of all these interesting things that I guess me and Mike, if we rewatch the film, maybe we would see them. You can infer almost a good percentage, whether it's 100% or just 80% or whatever, but at least a high percentage that the whole thing is a metaphor for the dream, anyway. It's a metaphor for this incest.
Yes, and I believe that the whole thing that's going on here, because in reality, not in the dream, the mother does not want to talk about any of this shit. She tries to redirect the conversation each and every time. So what it comes down to is, and there's another key scene into this is when the stepfather actually goes to the church and talks to the priest, and the priest says that unholy things happen in this church that I am not proud of. And I think giving birth to the spawn of incest would be fall in that category.
But also killing the child. I mean, it's, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all of it's unholy.
It's a really wacky family.
Well, and I believe that what also leads me to say that is the line from the mother at the end about how you have been the shame of my entire life.
See, the thing is that since I didn't get the incest thing, as Mike didn't, I assumed she was saying that you're a shame of my life, similar to, say, in Black Swan when the Barbara Hershey character says, you ruined my – I got pregnant, and because of you, I had to quit dancing. And Natalie Portman's character was all depressed because of it. In other words, I thought it meant – she meant that by being pregnant – probably unmarried, my life was ruined. Mm-hmm. I didn't get that it was because I'm ashamed because here you're a spawn of incest.
Yeah.
But it was probably because I missed it. I assume that's what you thought, Mike.
Yeah, I mean everything Eric is saying, I think can support the incest thing, but I don't know that it says that it underlines it and says that this is the only way to interpret it.
This is why they did the whole thing in dream imagery.
Right. So I'm just saying I don't see. Well, I think the twin thing, that's pretty obvious.
Uh-huh.
Right. That's pretty much outright stated.
Yeah.
Her grandfather being her father, now that you say it, makes some sense. I just don't know that it's clear or that's the only way to interpret it. Or I don't want to admit it that I was too stupid to pick up on the clues.
Well, it's not the only way to interpret it. That's my interpretation, but ever having watched it twice, I'm solid on that one.
And again, I've said this in other films, you know, if it fits the text, and that's the way you want to run with it, then run that way. You know, it doesn't violate anything that's there. Not clear enough to me. But again, this is the kind of film that I have a hard time really sticking with because of the tone and the nature of it.
Well, I agree, Mike. Obviously, because the way the film is done, it's going to be hard to understand it and also going to be interpreted many different ways. It's definitely a film that... it's trying to let us, as an audience, know pieces slowly, just as the main character is. And so I think that's intentional that it's done this way to make people decide what they want to think, even though they, meaning Karim Shirgwan, the screenwriter, is pointing us in a certain direction. And what happened was that Eric and Abe, it appears, especially you, Eric, because you watched it a second time, were able to latch on to the way that Karim Sher-Egwin wanted us or wanted you to go. In other words, so you followed his direction versus, say, the other interpretations.
Well, and I'll be honest, it wasn't easy to get there. The first time I watched the movie, I kind of had to scrape that out of it. But then watching it again, it all fits.
Okay, and to be honest, it even though Mike's 100% right, where at least just the viewing it the one time as he did and I did, and obviously he struggled with the film the first viewing as I struggled with the film the first viewing, we still don't know exactly all the things that you saw that brought you to this conclusion, especially watching it a second time. So I guess this is really just us still trying to figure out, at least for me anyway, figure out the scenes that exactly would point me that way. It's just that I'll probably have to rewatch it again to get that.
Well, and I'm sorry, because apparently you didn't enjoy the movie. I don't want you to watch the movie again if you didn't actually enjoy it. I'm just saying this is what I got from it.
I won't.
I would probably watch it again for sure. Maybe I'll wait for it to come on Blu-ray and where there'll be director's commentary and all that too, because I'd be curious for it.
I would be very curious to hear director's commentary on this.
Yes. And to be honest, I'm thinking if I watched it a second time, I would actually like it more. But
I found it more enjoyable the second time through.
Yeah, yeah. I'll probably do just that. But again, you know, that may be in a few months because it's still playing the VOD and not released on disc yet, to my knowledge. Mm-hmm. But you know, yeah, I mean, you never know. I mean, Mike, you know, you said Lords of Salem kind of grew on you, right? I mean, I remember you said that you just thought it. We all just said, yeah, it was pretty good, and we didn't put it on our top 10. And then like 7 months later, we were doing an episode, Mike, and you said, you know, looking back in 2013 or whenever that film came out, that's one of the films that still stays with me, and reevaluating it, you liked it more and more. And so if we did a list now, you would probably have that in your top 10 horror films of 2013, maybe, right? So
this, I'm not saying this
film would be that way, but go on.
It could be, but I liked Lords of Salem after the first viewing. I'm not that fond of this one after the first viewing.
Okay.
So I have less of an incentive to go back and rewatch it. I have no desire to own it on Blu-ray.
Okay.
We got Lords of Salem on Blu-ray and rewatched it with the commentary track, so I'd already seen it a second time.
Yep.
But I was already more open to doing it. And it's just, I barely have time to watch the movies I want to watch, let alone.
That's fine.
Yeah. So.
I totally get Mike not liking the movie. Totally get it. I really do.
And let me be perfectly clear. I would recommend, especially if you're into art house films, I would recommend the film. Give it a shot.
Oh yeah,
I agree. You know, it's a lot of films are going to have that where not everyone's going to get the snag with the hook. And everyone's going to have certain ways of sometimes they're going to be drawn in or out of the movie. And this is one of those kind of divisive flicks. And, you know, even though I myself have picked up on quite a few things, there's a few things that I was still deciphering on there. But then again, I didn't, like most of us, I didn't watch it a second time.
Well, and to circle back around to just to finish my thoughts on that, I believe that the grandmother's ghost was, first of all, her grandma Rose, they say that she went insane and threw herself out of a window. I believe the reason she went insane is because of this knowledge of the horrible things that happened in her family. And that she tried to, she was either blocking them out and having pieces recalled, and she tried to jot them down in her art notebooks or whatnot. Or she just went crazy from the knowledge. And the Jessica's mother, who's still alive, never wants anything to come to the light of day ever, 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 ever. In fact, I'm kind of questioning in my mind whether the grandmother actually threw herself out of a window or if, your old mom threw her out the window.
Ooh.
Because she was starting to spill the beans and she didn't want anybody to know. There's that. So I just think the whole movie and the dream sequences are the grandmother trying to communicate from beyond to Jessica the true story of what her family is.
So, you know, one thing I was trying to figure out was the symbolism of the wolf. I noticed that the rule she was supposed to do is avoid the horse and follow the wolf.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't figure out what exactly the wolf was supposed to represent in the grand scheme of things.
I cannot explain that, but man, I love those shots of the wolf. Those are fucking sweet.
Oh, no, they were beautiful. Kind of sad that part of the film was so small, though.
Yeah, agreed.
I did read an article, as I said, the Fangoria article, and this is what he says, the director, Bessette. Ramon Bessette says about the wolf and the horse. He's asked a question by Fangoria. Why is the female horse the bad symbol? And he goes, Bassett says, first, there is Fuseli's painting where we see the young girl in her bed terrorized by the horse. This is why we have the white ivory horse head in Jessica's nightmares. The second comes from the psychology of dreams, where the horse symbolizes death in utero. And at the beginning of the movie, we see Jessica reading a book about that. It fits very well into our movie. And then he talks about the wolf, and I thought that was where he was talking about the wolf. But
is the wolf supposed to be like a symbol of family, or?
Well, wolves are usually within a pack, like a family, so maybe that's part of it.
Oh, that's a good point.
Furry?
Well, here, this is what he says. Here's Fangoria. It goes, Jessica's nightmares are full of metaphors, including a horse and a wolf opposing each other. Can you explain a bit more about that? And Bassett says, yes, it was our intention to write the film symbolically. We wanted to get rid of classical narrative and the usual twists and suspense scenes of slasher-style films. We thought that Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers and all the boogeymen we love in other films might just be symbols for something that is different for each of us, and take this idea as far as possible with our film. We wanted to follow a very simple story, but in the end, offer one, two, or maybe three endings, depending on what level of symbolism affects you. Okay, so he's admitting that he and his co-screenwriter did have the film point to at least three different possible meanings for viewers. Just imagine taking all the pieces of a puzzle, putting them in a bag and mixing them up, then taking out one piece at a time. That's our nightmares, built around the storyline, each part connected to the previous and the next. To be more specific regarding the horse and the wolf, the idea was to make a film about femininity and motherhood. All right, so Abe, you picked that up. And the power of giving birth. For some women, it's a blessing, while for others, it's a curse, and they decide to abort. Each woman reacts differently in pregnancy, and our story is about that. Jessica knows she's pregnant and is afraid of that. And as we watch the relationships between the woman and this family, we understand why she is traumatized and afraid of becoming a mother herself. This is why there is a female horse and a she-wolf, because they are two archetypes of the mother. The she-wolf, like the emblem of the city of Rome that gave birth to Romulus and Remus, is the symbol of the good mother, while the horse is the bad one. So that's what he has to say in that.
I was giggling a little bit because he said she-wolf, and there's a song by Shakira called She-Wolf, which actually has a fairly amusing video that goes along with it. I suggest you look it up on YouTube.
All right, I shall
do that.
That's
why I started giggling.
Okay, so the origin of the wolf was from the Romulus and Remus legend. Okay.
Yeah, well, at least the wolf does, for sure. And then the horse is an archetype for death in utero. And as we saw at the beginning, where she's thumbing through the book, all those famous paintings of a horse being a nightmare. I think Fuseli's painting is called Nightmare, as a matter of fact. And there's a little demon looking over this girl that's sleeping, and there's a horse's head coming out of the...
Yes, I remember that painting. Yes.
Yeah. Anybody know the story of Romulus and Remus? Because I forget it from...
If I remember correctly, two brothers were raised by the she-wolf, and they grew up together. But eventually, the two came to conflicts. I forgot what reason they fought, but in the end, I think it was Romulus was victorious, and it would be Rome that would be named after him.
Okay, yeah, all right, I get that. I believe it. Now, Mike, obviously for someone like Chrissy, you know, this would be no problem at all. But for people who aren't familiar with the wolves and what it symbolizes and the horse, what it symbolizes, they could be completely confused. Because, I mean, for me, a horse is a girl's best friend. You know, you always see
a horse
girls.
Is a horse, of course.
You know, so I wouldn't have got the analogy here. And the wolf, I would have got the wolf as being evil because of, you know, the werewolves. So all this was way over my head.
Well, I don't know how your subconscious works with dreams. Has your subconscious watched a whole lot of David Attenborough's videos to understand the social dynamic of wolf family life? I understood for a long time, you know, that there's a certain sexual thing with girls and horses, you know, having this large muscular animal bucking up and down
between
your legs.
Their legs, yes.
You know, that's not what we would call subtle. And then you turn it into a unicorn by putting a giant penis on its head. So yeah, it was a weird interpretation. So the idea of was the horse the symbol of death in utero? I never would have guessed that in 1,000 years.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? I mean, so someone like Chrissy, who probably knows all this stuff because, you know, she loves reading about symbolism and all that, she would have known all these things, like you said, that as a male, a horse represents a male to a female, and never mind a death in utero and all these other things. So someone like myself and yourself as well, Mike, these things went way over our head. Now, what about you, Eric, for example? What did you get to understand that the horse and the wolf, and I mean, obviously the ghost of the grandmother in the dream says, beware of the horse and follow the wolf. But would you have guessed any of this if the grandmother didn't say that?
No.
Okay. What about you, Abe?
Not without, I think, no, if you haven't read that article to me, I don't think I would have picked that up on the reference. Except maybe the horse is a representation of death. I actually picked up on, but the wolf, yeah, that kind of was evaded me because that's why I kind of asked you guys.
I would be likely to go with falling back on Revelations on the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and you know the pale horse is death.
Mm-hmm.
So I might have gotten some of that, and it's obvious that the horse throughout the film is not represented as a happy character. And then by the end of the film, we do see the wolf emerge clearly as a protector, and apparently it swallowed the key.
Yeah, that was funny.
That was strange.
So, it just reminded me, there's something on Facebook which was having Jigsaw as a roommate, and he like force feeds the dog somebody's keys. It's like, do you cut open your dog or are you going to be late to work again? You know, it's, but anyway, I'm sorry, I digress. This just jumped into my mind. But yeah, how much of this is intuitive? And honestly, things like this, how much of it is just horseshit that people invent because they kind of like the way it sounds or it seems? I don't know. Again, dream interpretation is not my thing. And I imagine there's lots of ways to interpret the same thing. It's going to be how do the writers want you to interpret it, which is kind of making it a moving target. You know, if they're my dreams, then I can understand how the symbol matters, you know, what the symbol means to me. Even if I don't necessarily consciously understand it, I can imagine working it through. But now I'm trying to understand the dreams of a character that was written by somebody else using interpretations of dreams I know nothing about. And that just, to me, makes it sort of frustrating to interpret and to understand.
It was challenging, for sure.
Yeah, that is definitely true. Now, let me ask you this, Mike, because now, based off of I'm thinking about it, at least for the horse, and we know the grandfather was this religious kook and all this other nonsense. The horse represented, or was always presented as someone with a staff and in robes. Whether they chose a horse or they chose any animal or just a person, it didn't even matter, but they chose a horse. Do you think that represented the grandfather or alter ego, the grandfather? Because here is this grandfather that's a religious kook, and then you got this horse creature that's in religious robes and like a staff that you would see, say, a bishop or something, like, you know, Monty Python, you know?
I assume the ghost is the – not the ghost. I assume the horse is the grandfather. Uh-huh. And the wolf, guessing, is that the grandmother? Protecting?
Maybe the mother, or maybe the more positive nature of the mother or motherhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pretend to get the wolf.
I'm sorry to the listeners. I don't know how compelling this is listening to four men grope around in the dark for the meaning of a film that absolutely befuddles them.
What does it mean?
Mike, let me ask you this, because you brought this up and people are saying, what the hell is he talking about? The keys. And the wolf has the keys, or it's inside the... What were you talking about that? Because explain this whole...
Because there's a thing in the beginning where the grandmother says, find the key, help me find the key. She's looking for the key.
Well, and did you get what the key is for?
Is it the penis? What is it? No, what's the... It's to open... Is that where the baby is hidden?
Yes, that's where that's where the dead twin is hidden.
I think also... Because... I think the horse head was also carrying like a weapon shaped almost like a key as well.
Yeah. But again, it's then you also get the weird behavior in real life, which is, we have a dead baby. Where shall we put it? Let us hide it in the attic.
Well, and I don't know if that was... see, they showed that, but it
could be part of it.
So I don't know if it was actually an attic or whether it was symbolism.
So what I'm thinking is that the key didn't exist, and the baby, the twin baby that passed away, his body was gone, buried, you know, whatever. And this was all in the dream, which is, if you find the key in the dream,
you'll allow to seek the dark secret.
Exactly. That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rather than it actually being in the attic. The attic was actually part of the dream. And also, if reading this Fangoria article, the Bassett was talking about how he and the co-writer were writing where things become you begin to not know what is dream and what is actually real. So like you thought maybe that the attic was actually possibly in the real world, or a shot of something to go do in the real world, because you'll find a baby in the attic. But Eric made a good point based off of what even this director said, which is maybe it was all in the dream world and we weren't really sure, or it's portrayed as possibly either or, and we have to figure it out.
Right, and this is it's stuff I don't get, and I'm upright and outright just saying I don't get it. I don't necessarily like playing these games.
His ball and going home.
Yeah, no, but look, we've all known people, and sometimes we may be guilty of it ourselves. When they watch a movie they don't understand, they say, well, this is stupid. It doesn't make any sense. I'm not going to go there because I don't think that's fair, because I think the director knows what he's saying. I don't know if he necessarily communicated it effectively, or if it's... Or if the reason he didn't communicate it effectively is because of a deficit on my end, or just anyone in the viewer's end. So it's a challenging film. But if you like, you know, if you like dream interpretation, hey, have at it. Christie is going to go to town on this.
Well, let me ask you this, all of you, because if we didn't have secrets suddenly popping up, and we're assuming these secrets are real. And they are popping up, and it's not just our main character just assuming that, oh, maybe my grandfather, my grandmother suicided because she couldn't deal with life anymore because she knew what my granddaughter is and blah, blah, blah. And so she just started making stuff up. Maybe she's the unreliable narrator. Or maybe she's not an unreliable narrator, and there is a ghost telling her the truth, but she has to decipher it through her dreams.
Or maybe these are all memories planted by the Greys.
No, but the main thing what I was trying to get at is the whole film, while she's at her parents' or her ancestors' home, Jessica, our lead character, comes down with influenza. And as we know, people who have influenza have a fever, and they can go into feverish states, and they start imagining things, and everything's, you know, crazy, and they can misinterpret things, and they can suddenly think there's dark secrets that, you know, I mean, we hear all horrible stories.
But it's also called influenza because they are believed to be under the influence of whatever, the stars or whatever it is. So.
Well, and that's what I'm saying, because you get the fever. I mean, you always have these people who have quote-unquote hidden memories that are brought out through psychiatry, or they get older and they go, oh my God, I was molested, and maybe it's true, maybe it's not. I don't each incident should be judged separately or whatever. So, but maybe she's under a fever, and then it's all just unreliable narrator nonsense.
Because if you cut out the dream imagery, the real plot of this movie is Jessica goes home for her grandmother's funeral, catches the flu, and dies.
Oh, that's another interpretation, Eric, which is, yeah, you're right. She maybe at the end, how the ending is, where it's just this weird ending, she died from influenza, because as we know, influenza is actually a very dangerous, you know, everybody says, oh, you get the flu, but no, the flu.
Well, and I was going to ask you guys your opinion on that, whether she actually died at the end of the movie.
I thought she was in some kind of coma or something.
Okay. Well, and I'll be damned if I have an explanation for the very last shot of the movie. I didn't get it.
That kind of just annoyed me, really. It was just this long focused shot on her. I'm like, yes, yes, movie, yes.
Well, but you saw the one eye, right?
Yeah, I saw the one eye.
All right.
I saw the eye. Well,
what the fuck does that mean?
I have no idea. That's what was annoying, too.
Now, Eric, explain.
Eric, you don't know the one-eyed monster?
No.
Well, Eric, explain it. All right, Eric, explain this ending, the one eye thing.
Well, the dream ending, okay, is that Jessica witnesses the birth of her dead twin in adult size, and the two of them embrace, and then at the very end of the movie, they make it pretty clear which one is the dead twin and which one is her. Because there's all sorts of like skin and gooey shit all over the one that was just born. So they embrace, and then as in the real world, she appears to die. At least that's what it looked like to me. Abe thinks it's coma. Who knows? They continue to embrace, and then when they cut back, there's only one of them. And clearly it's the twin that was just born, because she's still got that shit all over her. But now her skin, instead of being all pale and having two black eyes, her skin has blood in it, is normal colored, and she has blue eyes. And then there's this extended shot where she looks straight up, and the camera's focused in on her face. And as it's focused in on her face, one of her eyes turns black. Yeah. And that's the end of the movie.
So suggesting perhaps they became one, in a sense.
Yes.
Well, what about the phantom twin, or the twin that gets absorbed by someone in utero? I mean, now you can even interpret it maybe even that.
Well, and maybe you're right, Phil.
You know,
I don't know.
Yeah, so I can see why Mike is like screaming in his own brain right now, saying,
"Fuck this movie!"
Because you can interpret that there was a ghost. You could interpret that she was just in a feverish state. You could interpret that she died at the end, or is in a coma, or it just ended where she's still in a dream. And then, you know, if had they gone 10 more minutes in the film, we would have saw her wake up. I mean, we don't know. So there's just so many different things you can interpret. Never mind the fact you can interpret that she did have a twin based off of, assuming it is real, that there may have been incest, that, or how I interpret it, but without figuring any of that out, which is that the grandfather was just an asshole because he was a religious kook, and as a result, the whole family is messed up because of it. And then it could be also guilt of being pregnant and not being married, just as her mother. So, you know, mother, daughter is like mother, where the mother maybe got pregnant by maybe not her father, but maybe by just the local schoolboy and came home and was ashamed. I mean, who knows? There's so many different things.
I'm sticking with my theory.
Mike, what about you? Any other things that we've discussed here that make you say, "Oh, maybe we think of it"? But again, I know you don't like playing this game.
I'm giving the filmmaker a benefit of the doubt. Okay. I am hoping that the filmmaker knows what the fuck he was talking about.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Now there are filmmakers who will make what they make and they won't tell you because they want to leave it up to you, and that's fine.
Yep.
And there's filmmakers who'll make what they make, and they'll say, this is what I think it means, but if others have other interpretations, that's fine.
Yep.
But I have a bit of irritation when someone makes something and they don't know what it is that they made or what it means.
Okay, yep.
And, like, in other words, I would hate to think they said, oh, and wouldn't this be a cool image? Well, if you don't know why you're putting the image in there, then please don't put it in there. Especially not an important image like the final shot of the film. Right, yep. With the one good eye and the one black eye.
Yep.
And I don't know. I kind of took it as a symbolism, because we're all constantly in the dream state, of her sort of incorporating and accepting this dead sister that she had.
Mm-hmm.
And reconciling that.
Yep.
You know, and I didn't take it as necessarily her dying. But again, I guess you could perceive that. You could start to perceive creepy shit where the dead sister possesses her body, and the sequel is going to be Jessica on the rampage.
Or rather, Lucy.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
So, Horsehead 2, Lucy's Revenge.
Now, that was very weird, because Lucy was supposed to be what the daughter's name was supposed to be, it appears. And what happens is in the dream state, when the two are born, the one that was quote unquote killed by the grandfather in womb, and then Jessica herself, when the fetus that died is born, she goes, I was planning to name it Lucy. I thought that was odd, because I would have thought if there was two births, she would just name the one that survived Lucy, because that's the name she wanted originally. But, yeah, go on, Mike.
I was going to say, people have... We are in this weird state when it comes to the unborn.
Yep.
And I want to tread carefully here, because...
Especially stillborn, for example.
Well, because you can get into certain political things that I don't want to get into.
Sure, yeah, I don't blame you. Yeah.
You know, but I think, what is it, like Wisconsin, where if you shoot a pregnant woman and she miscarries, you can be charged for murder. But if that same pregnant woman, the bullet had missed and then went to an abortion clinic, it's fine. You see this with this video going around now with the Planned Parenthood thing. You have all these mixed emotions about what's going on in utero and what state that being is in, and even to refer to it. I know I've had people get very annoyed if I'm teaching a reproduction unit, and if I refer to a fetus as a baby. There are people who say, it's not a baby, it's a fetus, because I'm conferring personhood upon it when they don't want to confer personhood.
Yeah,
but you also know that if you have someone who, people are trying to have a child and they miscarry, it can be a very traumatic event. That when you're expecting a child, and I know that, obviously you know this, Phil.
Oh, yeah.
That you speak about the child as if it's there, you know.
Oh yeah, already. Oh yeah. My wife's just under 5 months pregnant, and you know we have pictures of the quote unquote fetus, and yeah, that's a person in there.
And right, so but it's and again, people have, because this is all wrapped up in issues with abortion and those factors, that it's tough, and I'm not trying to proselytize here or impose any images, but it's a tough thing. So when someone says, if they have, I get the sense that they killed the child late term, or the fetus late term before it was born. Oh. And you get to that point, you say, oh, I've got my name picked out. And you have an attachment to that child. And the child comes out, and then that child's dead, and in her mind, Lucy died.
Right.
So I imagine psychologically it would be hard for her to take that name. Oh, well, Lucy's dead. We're just going to – let's just pick up the name and give it to
her. Go to another baby, else. Yeah.
Yeah, but that I didn't even know existed.
Right, yeah, that's fair.
So, you know, of course, it's also order of operations, meaning if Jessica came out first, then she would be Lucy – and then out would have come another dead baby.
Right.
And would they have bothered naming it at that point?
Right, yeah, that's fair too. Yeah.
Or would they have just said, This is stillborn fetus, number 7, whatever, you know. Put it in the trash.
That's awful.
Jeez.
Oh.
Yeah, so I know, all right, that's valid because yeah, I thought it was weird, but that actually makes a lot of sense because and again, we don't know. Again, this is a dream state, so we don't know if the unborn fetus, or I should say, the fetus or person, depending on your political views, died late term, like you said. But was it born a month before Jessica was born? I don't know, right? I mean, I guess you can interpret they were probably both born together, and one died, and the other one survived. But we don't know, right? I mean, this is again, we don't know.
Dream world.
Dream world, yeah.
Right, you mentioned unreliable narrator, and that's what we're dealing with here because we're seeing things, events given to us in Jessica's dreams.
Right.
And the events that play out that we see are the child born, the both of them born at basically the same time.
Right.
Right? But is that how it actually played out, or is that just how... For lack of, grandmother's ghost is communicating the story to her, and that's how she's interpreting the story.
Yeah, that's a good question.
And in the end, is that really a significant part of the story, or that we need to worry about?
Right. Well, and also, I mean, it could be also where the grandmother or the mother or someone just doesn't like the grandfather, and who knows? Maybe the grandfather. We don't know if the grandfather was really a scumbag. I mean, we're just assuming it was based off of dreams because no one actually comes out in the real world and says, yeah, by the way, your grandfather was a fucking asshole. So we don't know that, right? So we're just learning this through quote-unquote dreams. And also, I mean, you could say, you know, my grandfather or my father-in-law or whatever is an asshole, and that could just be your opinion because, you know, you guys had a fight one day because he didn't pay for your beer and you were pissed. And so I'm never talking to that asshole again. So, you know, it could be anything as stupid as that. If you really hate someone, I mean, people hate people for nothing in the real world. So we're just assuming, again, that the grandfather is a bad guy because of dreams.
I believe it.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. I'm just throwing out other interpretations and possibilities and whatever.
There are multiple interpretations to be had.
Yeah.
But, Eric, would you recommend that Chrissy Peterson Schoonover would enjoy this film?
Oh, God, yes. And please explain it to us.
Yeah. We should. I'll recommend it to her. I haven't seen her too much on Facebook in the past week.
Well, she just posted something. She's getting ready for a trip at the last minute because she likes to procrastinate. So,
oh yeah,
she probably won't be available immediately.
Yeah, and then she was doing a convention just as you did, Mike. She was doing PyCon, I think.
PyCon, yeah. I just saw her on Facebook that she's talking about procrastinating her packing.
Yeah. So she's been pretty busy herself. But I'll throw that out and tell her to watch this film just to see her opinion. I would love to hear what, I mean, because she loved Spring, you remember? I mean, we were like, you know, maybe it was okay, but nothing great, but she thought it was a fantastic film. Mm-hmm. So, and again, it was all because of the symbolism and all that and stuff. So,
mm-hmm.
Any further things on this film? Anybody want to pick out any certain scenes that were interesting or stood out? What did you guys think of the early scenes about where she was like nude and crucified? Because that obviously you could argue was a, I guess, quote unquote, not controversial, but I guess shocking scene.
I guess it's mostly just me shocked. I couldn't really figure out if it was symbolized at all. I mean, perhaps just the religious tyranny of the grandfather, perhaps.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And then when you're nude, that, you know, that means you're more what's the word?
Vulnerable.
Vulnerable. That's what I'm looking for. Thank you, Abe.
I was just about to be arrested, but
well, that's true. Sure. And then she had her mouth sewed closed, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
as if she was being silenced to keep her from speaking out against him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly right.
I'm not a fan of crucifixion. I am a fan of her being nude.
Indeed, indeed. And we do get a lot of scenes of that, including a dream bathtub sequences. Because did you notice the bathtub?
Well, I don't know about you guys, when the doctor comes to visit and says, she has the flu, she's going to have to take lots of hot baths. I don't know you guys, but my reaction to that statement was, woohoo!
Well, let me bring that the bath scenes up, because the first bath scene, she's in the room and it's basically completely pitch black, almost to the point where you can't see the walls, you can't see the sink, you can't see. So, and yet it's supposed to be in the real world. So right there, I was beginning to say, okay, maybe the movie's going to be, I guess you're not going to know exactly what the truth is going to be, because I wouldn't have thought the director would have filmed it where you couldn't see anything, because it's just a black screen with a bathtub that's white, and yet we're supposed to be not in the dream world.
Doesn't look like that.
No, and it was strange. I mean, because again, I didn't even know we were in the dream world yet, and I don't think we were, and yet he filmed it as if it was a dream world. So even the beginning of the film, the first like 20 minutes of the film, he had already started blurring the lines between the dream world and the real world.
Well, and that's intentional.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Let's see. What about the weird lesbian scenes between the
that
mother?
That was fucked up. I still don't understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really fucking weird.
Yeah, Eric, explain what it was. It was like she was
basically in the dream, Jessica's making out with her mother. And her mother actually started it and then pushes away and is like, "Ah, how dare you? Go stand in the corner, you naughty girl." And she's like, "What the fuck?" And then her mom starts getting it off with some guy whose face is obscured. I'm guessing that was Grandpa.
That's possible, actually. That's actually very possible. That's supposed to be what the interpretation is. I mean, because otherwise it's just completely random.
I mean, incest and the face of the unknown man, we just haven't got to the point where, you know, the quote unquote, the key is unlocked and we start learning all the secrets. So yeah, that was odd. Mike, now did you think, since you were the one that brought it up, and it was a valid point, because I mean, some people say that's what happened in The Cell or The Lords of Salem or Jacob's Ladder and various other films, is that some of the scenes, even if those films are considered good or not, depending on a person's taste. Do you think scenes in this film were just made up because, oh, that would be kind of cool, a weird and cool, so let's put it in a movie?
There's a lot I didn't catch about the film, and I'm in being upfront about that. So I don't want to say that if I didn't understand something that it was just the director showing off or just doing hot lesbian scenes because he needs to sell movies. I don't know. You're talking about the scene with the mother?
Yeah.
Any scenes now? I'm basically throwing out. I mean, you brought up a good point, which is that, you know, sometimes directors just put something in a film because they think it would be a cool scene. And
yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. I'm so feel so lost and confused about this movie.
Don't cry, Mike. Don't cry.
Well, I'll say this. I mean, obviously, anybody who does a film like this, an avant-garde type film that is dream, that has a lot of dreams in it, definitely wants something that looks cool. And you can pretty much take anything that is normal and try to make it look weird and make it look cool. And that could just go hand in hand with that type of film. And it wasn't intentional. Oh, it's just added because it's cool. But you were going to say something, Mike?
I think clearly there's a a thread running throughout the entire film that she resents her mother because her mother has been cold and detached and she wants her mother's love. I think that that takes it a little bit of a different direction.
That's a good point. Yeah, yeah.
She got it.
She gets it there. Wherever there might be. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I was looking at it.
Right.
It is just a weird perversion of that love. But again, I guess you go back to the story of the incest, right? You know, it's mm-hmm. of the sex between the parent and child. So, you had sex between her mother and the grandfather. And maybe that was a clue to push you in that direction.
Yeah, maybe. Right.
Yeah. All right. Any other scenes, Eric, that you want to bring up that you wanted to discuss that we haven't discussed?
Just that I was upset when the wolf got killed. I was sad.
It was a dream wolf that dream died.
Yeah, but still, a wolf is a real dog. It ain't no freaking little dog.
Didn't deserve to die. Oh, what a wise ass. Oh, that's terrible, Eric. Mean.
I had no way thought of that 2 hours ago.
Now, what about you? Yeah, go on, Eric. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say I don't have this movie 100% figured out. I just feel pretty good about my grandfather incest theory. Like I said, I have no clue about the last shot of the movie. I have no idea what the hell that meant. I would love to hear what Christy thinks of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And would you buy it on Blu-ray or something like that to see, you know, what would be the director would have to say about the scene specifically if he did a commentary?
Oh, I would really love to hear a commentary on this movie.
Right. Yeah. Very good. Hey, what about you? Any scenes that we haven't discussed that you wanted to bring up?
Let me think. I kept trying to figure out the importance of the. I don't know if you call him the homekeeper. I don't know, the old man.
George.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what his importance is.
That's a really good question. So there's a guy named George. He's like a handyman type, butler type, gardener type, all that crap that lives there, and plays an important role of the film. And yet, is he supposed to symbolize something? At all. I don't know.
I don't think he symbolizes everything, but he was a key part of the movie in that he was around for everything that happened with the mother and the grandmother right before she passed. And basically gives the stepfather his clue into the family history by letting him take a peek at grandma's notebook before he burns everything.
That's a good point. You're right. Yeah. Excellent point. Because the mother wants it all destroyed. And it's kind of shocking. It's like, there's your mother. And you want all her personal items destroyed and don't even want to care and blah, blah, blah.
Well, because the history's in there.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Interesting. All right. That's cool. All right. Yeah. For me, I don't have any further things that we haven't discussed scenes. What about you, Mike?
I've said my piece. There's only so much I could say about a movie that I didn't entirely comprehend or particularly enjoyed. I give the filmmakers credit because he had an idea and he got it on screen, and I think he did a very good job doing it. I'm not the audience for it. I hope that it does find the audience, and I'll be curious to see what he does next time because it certainly has potential.
Yep.
You know, whether I like this version of this or not, I think finding someone who can take a chance on doing something like that and bring it about effectively, is worth keeping an eye on.
Yep. All right. Abe, what about your final thoughts of the film?
I thought it was a pretty good film. It's not exactly my cup of tea, but that doesn't mean I won't recommend it to other people who might enjoy it. It's definitely going to, as I said beforehand, I think we all said before, is that you might need to see more once to pick up the pieces, and by the end of it, you're probably going to drop your own conclusion, because most of it's left to very open to interpretation. There's no clear cut answer to anything.
Yeah. For me, my final thoughts. I wish I had bought the film on VOD so I could just rewatch it. But I guess I'm glad I didn't, because maybe I will consider picking it up on disc when it comes out because of commentaries and all that. But I think tonight's episode was very helpful in understanding it, because a lot of the stuff that I missed or didn't catch, as you were able to, Abe, and especially you, Eric, since you got to watch it a second time, makes me more intrigued at the story, and rather than just a bunch of different cool or weird dream sequences that may or may not make sense. Again, I would agree with what most folks here said, that it's definitely not a film for everybody. You have to like avant-garde film in general, horror or not. But if you like horror film and you like art house film, this may be a film for you to check out. And anybody who wants to comment by emailing us at darkdiscussions@aol.com or the website, the Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast, we would be definitely curious to hear what you guys say. I enjoyed it, but it was a struggle. So I think that's
it was great. A struggle. I will give you that. This movie was a struggle, especially on first watch.
Yeah. So that's my final thought. A struggle, but I did enjoy it. What about you, Eric? Your final thoughts?
I thought I already gave mine.
Yeah, I guess you did. So fair enough. Very good. I guess we can wrap it up. So that's Horsehead, French film, but English language, filmed in France, but starring all English folk except for our lead actress, who is a French woman. And the Fangoria article said that they had actresses from France that came in that could speak English fluently. And this actress can speak English fluently to the point where she has actually a British accent, and she did a fine job. That's Horsehead. So, all right, very good. And Eric, why don't you lead us out then?
All right, thanks for tuning in to listen to us try and decipher Horsehead. Come back next week. We'll be talking about something hopefully a little more comprehensible.